And a good morning, everybody out there. This is Dr. Andrew Dyer joining you live this Saturday morning in early part of August 2025. And it is my honor and pleasure to be here with you today to share with you some thoughts and opinions on what's new in healthcare, what's old in healthcare, but coming around again, and how we can blend those two worlds together to give our patients the best chances at success and getting healthier. Learned this a long time ago from a patient, and saw him again recently, and I was reminded again that he always thought that the show seemed better and more linear if we laid out a few topics right at the beginning. And so I'm going to do that. I'm going to start by sharing two testimonials from patients this week that I saw in office. Then after that, we're going to either cover estrogen and menopause symptoms related to menopause time, or potentially we're going to jump into Alzheimer's. But we're going to do all that. I'm just not exactly sure the order yet because it depends on breaks and spacing and all that good stuff. But no further ado, I want to share with you a real happy patient from this week who wrote me the following testimonial. He said, "Shout out to Dr. Andrew Dyer. After taking the supplements he recommended for 2 months, my triglycerides are down 80 points. My hemoglobin A1C, and for those of you who don't know, that monitors diabetic status, that's down 2 points. HDL is up 6. Okay, minor change, but for him, he started off really low, so even a 6-point change actually was a 33% improvement for him, and he lost 7 pounds. And I love the way he finishes it. He says, "I can't wait to show these results to my cardiologist." So that was great. Happy for him, and obviously very happy that those are very typical results that we see in the clinic quite often. And if you haven't ever heard our show before, thanks for tuning in today. The clinic that I work in is called Take Two Healthcare, and it has been a part of the Miami Valley for probably 40 plus years, and I'm coming up on my 20-year anniversary with the office. But I'm a doctor of chiropractic. I went to school in Chicago and then moved here to Dayton, Ohio right after I finished. And that was back in 2005 already. So yeah, like I said, coming up on 20 years. In that time, I've added a couple of other advanced degrees to further help my patients and expand my knowledge. I'm a clinical nutritionist now as well, board certified in that discipline, and then also board certified in chiropractic acupuncture. So I take care of patients on a number of different levels throughout the week. And had another happy patient. She actually is dealing with recurrence of chronic mononucleosis or Epstein-Barr virus. For many of you that went to college, you know of this condition, and it's nicknamed the kissing disease. Because when one human that has this condition kisses another human that has this condition, they can transfer that virus on. And it runs through the saliva, and that's how it's typically spread. But this woman is in her early 70s, and she's had the condition for quite a while, but we did testing on her, and we got her started on a really good protocol and program, and I saw her this week for her follow-up after the first few months were over, and she said to me, or she wrote to me later, and she said, "Thank you, Dr. Dyer, for all the help you've given me. I've suffered from extreme and miserable fatigue since September 2024. So basically, her whole last year was kind of wiped out. She said, "I started feeling better after a month on your vitamin and supplement regimen. Although I still need to build up my stamina, I'm very thankful and happy to be feeling good enough to do my normal activities and enjoy life again." And she was saying she was also happy that I helped her get out of a thing that she was going to have to do just with a note. And she's still in the process of gaining her full energy back. But this is a lady who's 74 years old. When we tested her blood, we found that she still had very high, what we call titers. And titers are immune system activity related to her Epstein-Barr virus. So she had contracted this condition, who knows when, maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago. She didn't know the exact first time that she suffered from this. But that condition is never really expected to fully go away in terms of the titers may always remain high ongoing for life. So we tested her titer level for the EBV or Epstein-Barr virus. And what that means is the normal healthy level on that, if somebody's not in an acute flare-up situation, they should be down around 80 or less, maybe even 50 or less to fit the healthy range. Her number was 600. So she was having an acute immune response to a chronic problem. Now, the limitation on that test is that it doesn't tell us if the flare-up is happening right now, like in the acute phase, like, oh, this person just contracted this condition right at this moment in the last 3 to 4 weeks, or if it's been an ongoing lifelong issue. So it doesn't differentiate that for us, which is actually kind of cool, because when we came back to check it again, the number hadn't changed. It was still 600 when we tested her again, but her symptoms are improving. And we actually didn't expect the number to change. In fact, our report says these abnormally elevated titer levels may remain high for life even after symptoms are on their way out or significant improvement is noticed. So it was a really kind of cool case. Slightly confusing to share that with her because she didn't quite get why that number didn't go down. But I made it very clear to her the first time as well as the second time. Even if that number stays right where it is, and all the other things that we're able to control within your blood testing, hair testing, and urine testing are starting to show improvement, then we're winning the battle against this chronic condition. And so that was an amazing result for her and not only for us as well. But, oh, so many good big things happened this week. It's kind of amazing. I know we're going to talk about Alzheimer's, but and we're going to talk about estrogen too, but let's go to that Alzheimer's. I just need to pull up this article really fast. And what it was actually quite encouraging about is the things that I've been talking about here on this show for the last, I don't know, 5 or 7 years at least. There's a book I've mentioned many times on this program, and it's called End Alzheimer's Now. It was written by Dale Bredesen. He's a neurologist at UCLA. And he has a program called Recode. And it's basically and essentially what it is that we do in our office. Testing patients through their blood, analyzing their toxic metal burden, either through hair testing or urine testing, and then putting them on a very specific dietary approach and also a supplement protocol to help their brains get healthier. Because if we can't impact the health of the body first, we're never going to make the brain healthier. But the tricky part about Alzheimer's is unless we get to it early, we're not going to have as much expected levels of success. And these changes related to Alzheimer's really begin in someone's fourth, fifth, sixth decade, really even third decade of life. So we're thinking, oh yeah, this is affecting our 70, 80-year-old population. No, it's actually starting to affect our 40-year-old age group and then our 50-year-old age group. In the article that I found this week, they were talking about a lady whose memory was fading in her late 50s. Her name was Tammy. She was beginning to lose track of her life. Car keys, eyeglasses, her purse disappearing multiple times a day. How difficult would that be to get through a day if you lost your purse multiple times? You'd be constantly calling your credit card companies to cancel your cards because you don't know where they are. You've left them on the seat of the cart and walked away in the grocery store or what have you. But if you lose those type of things, it just makes your whole day harder. You can't be as productive. You can't be as efficient. And there's real, real concern about what will progress. So key characters in novels that she was reading were also being forgotten. Groceries left in the garage. Keeping the books for the family's businesses became impossible. She said in a quotation in this article, I honestly thought I was losing my mind, and the fear of losing my mind was frightening. I bet it was. It is. I mean, think if you couldn't wake up and know right from the moment your feet touched the ground what your purpose and intent for the day was. If you didn't have that ability, you would feel relatively lost, correct? After 20 weeks in a randomized clinical trial designed to drastically help her change her diet, exercise, stress levels, as well as social interactions, her cognition started to improve. Now, 20 weeks is roughly about half a year, right? We have 52 weeks in a year, so 26 would be that halfway point. So a little under half a year, she was able to regain some of this cognitive decline that she was noticing even in her late stage 50s of age. She's able to read and recall novels, correctly balance spreadsheets again, and a blood test. Here's where we bring it all back to what we do. blood testing, right? We talk about that all the time. That's a big, big portion of our practice and the way that we help people in order to figure out what it is they need to become healthier, whether that's with their brain, maybe they're dealing with cancer, anemia, diabetes. We have to test them first, because without testing, we're just guessing at what they might need and benefit from. So we need to test them first because we need to know where their blood sugars are, how healthy their kidneys are, what is the liver and thyroid looking like, and so many other important data points so that we can correctly assemble a protocol for them to follow related to diet and exercise and supplementation. So in this case, the one from the article, a blood test even found levels of amyloid, a hallmark of Alzheimer's disease, were retreating in her brain. And this was actually recorded in a study published in June 2024. She said, I'm coming back and it was really good, like I was prior to the disease being diagnosed. This lady from the article, Tammy, she's now 68 years old. And she told a researcher on the study, an older but better version of me. Her cognition was showing additional improvement, however, after she completed a total of 40 weeks of intensive lifestyle changes. And they interviewed the principal investigator on the study, a very famous doctor that has created some of these gold standard approaches with diet and lifestyle medicine to help people with a variety of diseases and conditions, but primarily now targeting Alzheimer's and other dementia, other cognitive declines. The exciting thing for me about this article was not only the involvement in the lifestyle intervention, so figuring out what these patients really could benefit by eating more of, or in some cases eating less of, the things that make us not as healthy. There were also some additional suggestions from a supplement standpoint. And now, even though I'm going to name these supplements right now, this is not a treatment plan for Alzheimer's, because every patient's going to be different, no matter if their disease state is the same or not. Each patient's needs will be slightly different based on their testing. So supplements that were provided to everyone in this intervention group included a daily multiple vitamin, omega-3 fatty acids, so those are fish oils, okay, with curcumin. We use that. We use all three of these all the time. Coenzyme Q10, or in a lot of the cases at the office, we use ubiquinol, which is a more potent form. Vitamin C, B12, magnesium, a probiotic, and even some of the mushroom extracts. That was the fascinating part for me. And I knew this would be there, or I suspected it would be there in the article, but to be able to take that all-encompassing approach and put people into a large study group and then follow them for 10 years down the road, I mean, it takes a massive amount of money and organization to conduct these research studies, but that's what some of our bigger research colleges and universities are doing, and they're starting to find that some of these non-drug approaches in the cognitive and memory impaired groups are really proving beneficial. We're going to take our first break. Dave's looking at me, giving me that get out of here. So we're going to do that right now. You're listening to Dr. Andrew Dyer this morning for Take Two Healthcare, your guide to better living on AM 1290 and News 95.7 WHIO. And thank you very much, Dave. We're back. Excuse me, Dr. Andrew Dyer here joining you live. And before we get away from our topic of Alzheimer's, I wanted to share with you the reason I brought it up today. And that is, we've helped many patients with this condition over the years. And there are many of our great case studies recorded and available to be shared with you through our website. So if you're looking for more information on that, go to take2healthcare.com, click on the case studies link, and then read through some of those topics. There's one that I wrote at the beginning of the year. It's actually way down at the bottom of that list because the title of it starts with a small letter P and then a large letter T-A-U. So the term is p-tau. And what p-tau is it's a specific phosphorylated protein. Okay, that's a big, long, fancy word for folded, crinkled, turned on itself protein. And the reason that's significant is the brains and bloodstream of patients that are affected by Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia and other mild cognitive impairments show higher levels of p-tau in their system than our standard population does. And initially, the research looked like there was a number, the p-tau number 181 looked to be the leading contender for most sensitive and most specific to the condition of Alzheimer's and dementia. So when we started testing this year, because LabCorp only made it really available within the last year, year and a half. And we were kind of waiting to see what the research would bear out. And so when we did that, p-tau 181 was the best option that we had. And actually, in the medical community, they do sometimes test these levels through a cerebrospinal fluid sample. Well, we can't order those tests, and we really don't need to because the blood is our answer point. But now, after several more months of collecting data in the field, there's an even better version of the test, and it's called p-tau 217 now. It's not really that much different. It's still along the same lines, but it's a different protein number. It's a different location in the brain and body. And so the studies are now showing that even taking both of those samples in a patient can start to help us figure out, if you liken it to a diabetic patient and we take a glucose and an A1C on them and we see a glucose come back at 300 and the A1C is 14, we know that their diabetic condition is wildly out of control and they really need help fast. Like the lady I met with last, as my last patient of the week yesterday. She needs help today. Similar in the Alzheimer's testing group, if we see a p-tau value, which on a healthy range person is below 0.8, if it comes back at 2.5, I've never seen one quite that high, but I have seen some in the irregular range before. But if it comes back double, triple, quadruple the range that it should be in, we know we have to get cracking quickly. And the article likens it to this. It is a great analogy. If you picture a brain full of damage as a sink full of water, when you just turn off the tap, it takes a long time for that sink to slowly drain, right? And if you want those amyloid and p-tau numbers to go down in 20 weeks, like in the study, as we found within one of our blood tests, you're going to need a Roto-Rooter, okay? Something to dig that hole out and replace some of that old used up tissue with new fresh tissue that can actually heal and repair. We know the body has that ability. The brain, the heart, the liver, the lungs, the kidneys, they can heal and repair provided we support them with the right things. Get some of the garbage out of the way, get some good healthy food going in and some regular exercise, but not too strenuous of exercise. That takes me over to another patient that I talked with this week. I'll be quick. He said he's been reffing soccer in this area for a long, long time. In fact, I've known him since I coached soccer so many years ago. But I had to have a difficult conversation with he and his wife. He's a kidney patient, and his nephrologist has told him, you really can't do any strenuous exercise right now beyond just the daily activity routines that you have. But he's used to reffing like 6 or 8 games in a weekend. 3 or 4 on Saturday, 3 or 4 more on Sunday. That's what he's used to doing. And he's very, very physically fit, but right now he has kidney problems and we need to make his kidneys better before he starts reffing on that level again. So I played the bargaining game with him. I said, well, how about if you just do 3 to 4 games spread out throughout the whole week? So maybe one on a Monday, one on a Thursday, one on a Saturday, something like that to give your body a chance to heal and repair. And that's gonna play a key role into his recovery. His GFR actually is getting better. His wife wasn't happy because it didn't get as good as she thought it should, but I'm telling you, his medical doctors were not able to help him get it better at all, and we did that. So we'll talk about that on the other side of the break, too. You're listening to Dr. Andrew Dyer for Take 2 Healthcare, your guide to better living on WHIO. And we are back and rolling again. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I wanted to give a quick shout-out and say hello to anybody from my business group that I meet with on Wednesday mornings. We're a team of experts sharing information with each other, and I tell the people in this group all the time to tune into this program. So hopefully some of them did to get the chance to do that today. And I wanted to jump into another quick topic, which is we take live callers on this radio show. So Dave's standing by to help us get your call on the air. If you have a question for me, the number to call is 937-457-1290. So give us a call. We do have a few lines open and got about 20 minutes to get your calls taken care of if you have them. Wanted to give you a little feedback on the type of patients that I take care of and as well as some of the questions that I get from them each week. I know it's not a live caller on this program, but some of you may have this same type of question. And so Lou wrote me this week and he said, Dr. Dyer, I'm taking 2 eye drops for glaucoma. And he names them. And then he said, I found that the one could cause kidney stones. And I had kidney stone issues since I've been on it about 5 years. I stopped taking about 6 months ago, and I've only had one episode since I've stopped. Now, important for glaucoma is we need to maintain a low eye pressure or we'll continue to progress towards losing sight. And so then he goes on to say he went to a different eye doctor this time, and they kept him on the original med, the latanoprost, and then they added another eye drop for him. And he said, this one doesn't agree with me at all. Is there anything else you can suggest for my glaucoma issue? And I wrote him back and I said, you know, I think there's sometimes a misunderstanding when you hear our program that we're opposed to medicine. And that really couldn't be further from the truth. I'm not opposed to medicine. I'm opposed to people being blanketly given medicine without a real reason behind it and without an understanding of the potential side effects that they may suffer with. And then it's a matter of how could we balance them taking their medicine with some other natural options to either combat those side effects or potentially make their condition better where they may not need as much medicine. That's where we come at it from. And it's not that I'm opposed to the medicine. And in this case, this is what I told him. I said, Lou, they typically like to see pressure level readings for a glaucoma patient down in the low 20s. So really they like it 20 or lower. But if you're 21, 22, they say, okay, you're kind of right on the borderline to demonstrate a stable and an under control situation. And I said, this is my exact note, I'm reading it right now. Sounds like maintaining the medication is in your best interest for your sight's sake at this time. But I knew that Lou, because I had talked to my staff members earlier in the week, and they said, well, he wants to get retested with his blood work and go from there. And I said, okay, great. So I wrote him back again and said, I know you're getting testing done soon. Once we have the ability to sit down and look at that together and have a back and forth discussion, I may have several other suggestions for you. And I gave him some suggestions in my follow-up note. I said, there's a nutrient we use called Formula 707, which has the active ingredient of bilberry in it. Bilberry is a important nutrient for eye health on a number of levels, not just specifically for glaucoma, but even cataract formation and other eye problems. Fish oil and omega-3s, CoQ10 or ubiquinol, and potentially even vitamin E. Now, none of those are FDA-approved treatments for glaucoma. And I wasn't misleading him in this situation. I was saying, you need to stay on your meds until we get you tested, and probably even beyond that, because my question to him is, what are your eye pressures? And he told me his right eye was at 34, and his left eye was at 27. He's had two retinal tears in his right eye, and he has only limited vision there already. And the left eye had one retinal tear, but he has 20/20 vision in the left eye. So my statement to him was, maintain your medications, let's get you tested, and then figure out what else can be done to help you. And I think that's going to go a long way for helping Lou preserve the sight that he has, because once those pressures go too high, it's really, really difficult to overcome that, reverse that, turn things around and get it going the right way. The other great question of the week is, what do we do when hormones are out of balance? Well, we have a lot of great options, actually. And I know for many female patients that come into our office, they think, well, Dr. Yaley, a female doctor, is the hormone expert. And she certainly knows a lot about hormones. I'll give her that. I'm also very capable in taking care of those hormone cases, too. Been in practice for 20 years. I have a clinical nutrition board certification, can take care of all sorts of great cases, as we all can. But just to give it kind of a simple synopsis, because I think when people hear the word hormone, they only think about the sex piece. Okay, if your hormones are screwed up, you can't have sex with your partner and do all the things that you may enjoy with them. Well, that's not the only thing that hormones help us with. That's just a small piece, right? But some of the other issues around that, fatigue, mood swings, hot flashes, sure, low libidos in there, and even sleep disturbances. These are things we hear patients talk about pretty much on a daily basis in our practice when they first come in and meet us, get to figuring out what it is we can do to help them. But hormones act as the body's chemical messengers, meaning they're going to take a signal from one place where they're produced. And when we think hormones, let's just use the male example for a moment, because I think when we talk hormones, we kind of always think female hormones are disrupted. Well, male hormones can get disrupted too. But in the testes, yes, hormones are produced there, but only about 20 to 30% of our full hormone complement is produced there. About 80% of it comes from our lung tissue function, our liver function, our thyroid function. So we have far more tissues in our body than just in our sexual organs of reproduction that actually help us make hormones. And if any one of those key organs isn't functioning properly, then that's where we start to see, when we do a blood panel on a male or a female patient and we check their hormone levels, they're not going to be as balanced as they want to be. Well, hormone imbalances, like I just said, can lead to a whole bunch of other symptoms, but there's a lot that can be done for them. There's so much that can be done from just a natural approach. And there's many clinics around this region of the Miami Valley that really focus specifically on taking care of hormones. And that's got to be incredibly frustrating if you've only got one tool in your arsenal to take care of hormones. You test a patient and they're low, and you give them something that jacks up that level. But what about addressing all the functional and underlying reasons why those hormones weren't well balanced in the first place? What if this patient has terrible liver function, or the kidneys aren't converting cortisol properly? The adrenals actually make the cortisol, and then the kidneys help push them out into circulation. What if their lung tissue isn't healthy? You know, simply looking at estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, DHEA levels on a blood panel is good, but in my opinion, even better if we can look at the root cause level or the foundational mode. And Dr. Merkel's talked about this for years and years and years, and it comes from the basic physiology textbook that we all took our coursework from during chiropractic school, medical school. They use the exact same book. It was written by an author named Guyton. And that physiology text defines hormones as a non-essential tissue. Non-essential meaning the body can live without them. If you're in a terrible and horrific car accident and you break every bone in your body, you give yourself a concussion, you've got fractured vertebrae, do you think your body cares what your current testosterone level is if you're a man? No, you're lying in bed trying to repair bones, which actually, when you have the right hormone levels, your bones will repair faster. But your liver, your kidneys, your heart, your brain, all those other tissues take higher priority, meaning they are the essential ones. That any new nutrient supply from food, from supplementation, from exercise, from water, and anything else we put in our body is going to go to take care of those primary and essential functions first. And then if, and only if, we have extra nutrient balance left over after all those primary functions are satisfied and taken care of, can we start the process of rebuilding the hormone panel? Rebuilding the hormone balance, I should say, but we measure it within the panel. And there's a variety of ways to do so. There's a popular clinic located very close to ours that does a urine test for hormones. I'm not a huge fan of testing hormones through the urine because I liken it this way. If you wanted to see what was happening inside your body, wouldn't you prefer to test the blood level, since the blood is inside you and the urine is an output source? Urine has already left your body by the time they're measuring it. So yes, it gives you metabolites and you can measure what was once in there. But to me, it makes a lot more sense to look at the actual scoreboard inside the system as it's currently trying to function. So we do the blood panels to find out. And when a male patient comes in, there's a specific hormone panel we run on them. And when a female patient comes in, there's obviously a specific hormone panel for them. And it's very intriguing because patients almost always think, I've got a hormone problem. I know I do. I'm going to come and see Dr. Dyer and he's going to fix my hormones. And 9 times out of 10, I tell them, sure, we can check your hormones for you, but I bet your problem is hiding elsewhere. And I don't know that until we get the test results back, but I've just been doing it long enough now that we can make some kind of guesses before we see the numbers, that if we just focused our attention and our time on balancing sugars and keeping the liver and the kidneys healthy, providing good bone remineralization too, because for many of these female patients, as estrogen levels taper off, as laps around the sun accumulate and they become more wise, not old, I didn't say old, they're becoming more wise. But as that's happening, their estrogen levels are typically tapering off. When that's occurring, it's leaving them a little more open to problems like osteoporosis, cancer rates change as hormone levels fluctuate. And even different, reproductive issues that are no longer a concern for them at that point. They're trying to still keep those tissues of the body healthy so that they don't have to lose them or take them out in some other fashion. So hormones could be a complete topic of discussion for an infinite amount of time. If I had a 7-hour radio program, I could talk about hormones that entire time. But obviously, with the length of time we have today, the discussion of hormones has to remain short. But the whole point, I think, that I'm trying to share with you folks that are listening today is, in our practice, we are experts at blood analysis. Now, we do a lot more than that, too, but we are absolute experts in blood analysis. And I'm very fluent in the testing out there and available. Yes, I can read the hormone panels in the urine, and there are other ways to assess these things, even through saliva. I don't love them, but I can use that information to a degree. I'm still going to usually suggest that the patient get the right kind of testing so that we can really help them. But it's only with proper analysis could you really begin to put together a protocol to help someone get better. And it's not a protocol that applies to all patients. It has to be uniquely specific to each patient and meet them where they are. Because if we don't do that, we're not going to be as helpful as we could be. I see that we have a caller online. I know we're coming up against a break here shortly, but let's try to grab Jenny. Let me do this real quick here. Boom. Jenny, you're on with Dr. Dyer. How can I help you?
Yes, I was calling to ask a question about chronic venous insufficiency.
Okay.
I think that's what the president had, and they were acting like there was nothing they could do for it. And couldn't they do a phlebectomy or a laser ablation or something?
Yeah, so good question. Yes, chronic venous insufficiency has a variety of phases and stages that it'll progress through. And in some of the early phases of it, there's evidence of valvular damage. So the little valves in the veins are what helps pump that blood back up to the heart. And when those valves get damaged, there's not a whole heck of a lot you can do to fix the valve. But to fix the overall function of the system, yes, there are some options, certainly. And actually, one of the options, from my opinion, is movement first, because exercise and those muscular contractions help activate those valves in the vein to move that blood back up towards the heart. But if the valves are damaged, it doesn't matter how much exercise you do. If there's the damaged valve, it's not gonna get better with exercise. Compression therapy is one, elevation of the legs. But yes, there are other medical treatments. Absolutely, ablation is one of them on a medical side, and even other surgical procedures could be utilized. But in my opinion, depending upon how healthy or unhealthy the system is, we got quite a few options on how to make that better. Whether it's targeting liver, kidney, blood pressure issues, there's a whole host of things that kind of contribute to this problem. So those need to be addressed and looked at. I really appreciate your call. We're running right up against a break here, but do appreciate your call very much. We're going to take a break, like Dave said, and we'll be back right after this on WHIO. And thank you very much. We're back. If you haven't done so already, again, Dr. Andrew Dyer here joining you live just for the last few minutes here. If you haven't already done so and you're a Facebook user and you want to follow our page, that'd be amazing. And all you have to do is go to Facebook, type in Take 2 Healthcare Center, and then hit the like button. I put up a post this week. It's actually a quote from Thomas Edison, and we've had it hanging within our office off and on some of the walls in the hallway or in our treatment rooms for about the last 20 years that I've been there. I can remember this quote, and it's from Thomas Edison. He says, "The doctor of the future will no longer treat the human frame with drugs, but rather will cure and prevent disease with nutrition." And there's another version of it, too, that goes on to talk about diet and a couple of the other things that we do and think about all the time. So Thomas Edison was from a long time ago in the history of our country, and he's known this and shared this with us many, many moons ago. So I put that up and I asked, is your current doctor a doctor of the future? And if you're not working with somebody who thinks in that manner, maybe you need to, or maybe you need to do a little research on finding out some more. Just to finish kind of touching on that caller that we had on the other side of the break, she'd asked about chronic venous insufficiency, and I talked about the valvular damage that can occur there. there's a couple of other risk factors for it. The risk of it increases with age. Yeah, they always put family history or genetics, but deep vein thrombosis. So if you've had previous blood clots in the deep veins of your leg, that can lead to damage to the valves and can lead to an increased risk for CVI. Obesity, so excess weight puts extra pressure on those veins. Even pregnancy. And it's not so much the weight gain of pregnancy, but the hormonal shifts combined with the weight gain and all the processes that are natural and normal to undergo during pregnancy can still lead to a greater risk of damage to those veins. They're delicate tissues. And when they get damaged, it's hard to fix them back up. Prolonged sitting or standing, so being in one position for extended periods can hinder blood flow, and then lack of physical activity. And those are some of the risk factors, right? But what can be done? Well, we have to stay fit. We have to stay healthy. There's certainly ways to diagnose and treat this problem. They do ultrasounds to make sure the veins are working properly. They can do imaging scans of CT or MRI. And even sometimes they'll place a stent up near the femoral artery and veins at the front of the pelvis. Is where there's a common occlusion that goes down to the rest of the leg. I know this happened to one of my grandmothers in her later years, in her 80s. She had to have a stent put in and on both sides of her anterior pelvis just to open up blood flow to the lower legs. And she wasn't at that time able to move as well because she was affected by a number of other health conditions. So just being more sedentary started to kind of put more pressure on those areas. And it's an easy fix if you can identify the problem. Just to review, went through a lot of great stuff today. Hopefully you found some nuggets out there that you can put into practice tomorrow. But if you're not working with a doctor of the future, give our website a look and give us a call Monday morning. And you will hear us again next Saturday live on this program on AM 1290 and News 95.7 WHIO.